Hello, everyone. I'm Asha Nayaswamy, and it's my great joy to be here today with my friend Gian Garcia Davis. He is speaking to us from Ananda Village, where he presently lives. He passed through Palo Alto early on in his spiritual life, but I think most of his home has been Ananda Village, at least until now. Hello, Gian. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here with you.
Yes, this is a great side effect of this sheltering in place is that I've gotten to spend time with everybody. It's just been delightful. Okay, Dion, so talk to us. Tell us basically some of the basics about who you were before you met Master, what your life was like, where did you grow up, where did you go to school, what were your interests?
Well, not surprisingly, like you said, I came through Palo Alto, so I grew up in Belmont, actually, right down the street from you. And I think it would be appropriate, you know, I'm often asked, you know, what brought you to the path? And even to be honest, I sometimes scare people because it's because of suffering. And if I backtrack to my earliest memory, which is really fascinating, and I didn't realize this until after the coming to the path, but my earliest memory was, you know, sitting on my father's kitchen floor. There was a party happening. I don't know whether it was because I was turning one or maybe it had nothing to do with me, but I was playing drums with upside down bowls. And this feeling just came over me of complete alienation, that here I was around my family and that I was utterly unlovable, that they didn't love me. They didn't even know I existed. And so it may sound kind of stark or surprising, but that feeling, that thread, I think carried forward through my early childhood, through my adolescence, through my friendship, through my relationships with my parents and siblings, and just this nagging feeling that I'm alone in this world in a foreign land. And so naturally that drove me to acting out in ways that probably weren't serving me, that were maybe somewhat could say self-destructive. Getting into trouble. My family, you know, was a broken home. And so that had an effect. But I basically did as best as I could just to keep my head above water. And studies, it's funny because I'm sure we can all look in our lives that there's something we're looking for in life. And I knew I wanted to be happy. I knew I wanted to resolve this pain. And so I invested myself quite fanatically in whatever caught my attention, whether that be building cars. You know, I would rebuild cars and build motors and try to make those hot rods that everybody but me, you know, disapproved of and didn't enjoy. But, you know, just and whether it was through the party life, whether it was through trying to be cool, trying to fit in, trying to find security outside myself. And naturally, everything kind of fell in pieces. And
I'm going to stop for just a second.
Yeah.
Being that small, I mean, of course, at the age of one, you didn't know about reincarnation. But did you ever have any sense in your youth that the way you felt was too big for the circumstances of the life you were living?
I think, you know, it's interesting because I feel, as it often happens, our pain masks things, you know, and trauma and difficulties. That becomes the predominant in my, it became the predominant in my consciousness. And I, you know, just was going through my adolescence. I was going through and there was never any reflection. It was just this desperation of trying to escape that pain. And so there wasn't really much awareness other than, oh, this is what society, this is what I'm being told right now I need to do, whether through, you know, a group of friends, this is what you need to be to cool, be cool and be accepted among us. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do everything I can to live up to that. The interesting thing that did strike me, though, was some karmic condition that wouldn't allow me to act in a way that was not right and be approved for it. And so I would do exactly what the person next to me is doing, but they would call me out and say, that's not right, Kevin, you know, which was my birth name, you know? And I was like, I can't win here. You know, I'm doing what you're doing. I'm saying what you're doing. I'm I'm judging as you're judging, and yet I'm not being accepted. So there was this interesting thing that I feel life would not allow me to get stuck in that routine of, you know, positive reinforcement that this works. And positive. So that's probably the first spark.
You didn't get any positive reinforcement for your negative behavior.
Yeah, why not? But I'm still wondering why not. Life would have been so much easier.
Your bad karma had good karma in it too.
Exactly. Is winning lottery good or bad karma? I don't know.
So how long did you live that way? Did you go to university? Did you finish high school?
Yeah, so I finished high school, and I was reflecting, actually, that I was telling my wife, Arati, that, and this might sound interesting, because in senior year, I was on probation, and I think that's probably indicative enough of where I was at. And I was reflecting just
Excuse
a couple
me,
of days
probation
ago.
Probation from the police or probation from your high school? From the police?
No, probation from police, yeah.
Oh, legal you were a quick study. You got your karma going fast. Okay.
Yeah, so. I needed to get some things out of the way, you know.
Okay.
But this is something that really struck me that, you know, there's moments in life that's very positive and you still have a warm spot in your heart. Do you have you ever experienced that? You think back, it's like, that's still a blessing, you know. There's a warm spot in my heart for my probation officer who was the first person at 17 that I felt a sincere care from, that she was not judging me from my past. She wasn't condemning me because I'm in trouble with the law or, and, you know, a troubled youth, but she's saying, you have potential. You're just not tapping into it. And I still feel that support. So that was senior year in high school. And I think that just kind of, it got a momentum started, though very subtle, you know, because it wasn't something like I graduated high school. Because mind you, I also got off probation when I graduated high school. So I was kind of, you know, I was free to do what I wanted. But that also, it just was that seed that kind of started to take root. And again, blessed karma, because I started going to San Mateo Community College. And the type of music I was listening to at the time was exposing me to the disadvantaged in the Bay Area, to the lower income sector of East Palo Alto, San Francisco, of Oakland. And it was underground rap music. And surprisingly, other than just being this negative presence, it inspired me, as most people who come from broken homes, they want to help others in that situation. So I started studying psychology, sociology, and volunteering in East Palo Alto, and just doing things in that nature of wanting to help others who may not have any sense that there's something else. And what really tipped me in the direction of the spiritual path was actually a trip to Spain. And it really was a surprising shift. Now, this was years later because, you know, I was in community college for an embarrassing amount of time. And it really seemed, you know, it really didn't seem like it was going much because, again, like, I poured my heart into it, and yet I just felt like these little barriers were being placed. Like, this isn't what I'm looking for. This isn't going to really expand. I'm just repeating someone else's understanding. Like, this, where is the lifeblood of this life? And so I went to Spain in 2008. And I remember when it was broken up in two sections. We were in Granada, southern Spain, for 6 weeks, and then Madrid in the other 6 weeks. And in between, in sometime in Granada, we were going over to Morocco. And so I was on this boat going over the Gibraltar. And I remember just being paralyzed with this self-conscious fear. Because again, I felt intimidated by people. I felt like they were going to hurt me and judge me and reject me and all these feelings of alienation. So I was sitting comfortably, I isolating myself, listening to somebody else's iPod. And they had a lot of reggae on it. And reggae, like any music, it can have a very spiritual bent to it. Talking about Jah, talking about overcoming delusion, realizing your own self, one with Christ. And there was this one song I was listening to, Heart of a Lion, that you have the courage to grow, that you can become whoever you want. I'm just repeating this song. Takes 2 hours to go, 2 hours or so to go over the Gibraltar. I'm repeating this 4-minute song again and again, And that was the first time I felt the power of music, because I started to feel my consciousness change. And I started feeling that, yeah, I can change. I can be the person that I want to be. I don't need to be this insecure little kid afraid of talking to people. And within that boat, that tram ride, that boat ride, I got up and I started talking with my peers.
Good
and
Lord.
I started to relate. And it was interesting because the first part of that trip, you know, it was more of a party abroad than a study abroad,
yeah.
Right? And so my grades were suffering. But then after that boat trip, something turned. And it wasn't conscious on my part, other than I wanted to be popular. I wanted to be liked. I wanted to be fun and funny and outgoing. But something changed, because the second part of that trip, I stopped going to the clubs. I stopped drinking. And all of a sudden, I was walking to the subway one day, and out of the blue, this feeling came: you need to read, write, and meditate. What?
Oh.
What is that?
Uh-huh.
And then it continued and said, convert your father's old wine cellar, which is really a closet, into a meditation room when you get home. And mind you, I don't know. I didn't know about meditation. I never read a book on meditation. I don't know if at that point in my life, if I've ever completed a book. So where did that come from, you know?
Oh my gosh. You know, just as a side, your horoscope must have just done a complete flip at that point.
Yeah.
I'm
right.
sure if you ever had a chance to know what that minute was, it's probably all your planets just changed places in that second. But you know, karma ends and karma shifts. Okay, so we're still in Spain. But now you're going to read, write, and meditate. So did you?
So, like, I think most things, you know, I'm sure we can all look at our lives and see those desires or those things that we think, this is it. This is going to complete me. And I thought traveling to Spain was going to be it. So I came back from Spain, kind of pumped up from I'm a world traveler now, you know. And I fell right back into that insecure, unstable individual. And it broke my heart, and it just made me so desperate that I finally cried out in agony, you have to help me. Mm-hmm. And even then there was a doubt in the back of my mind, who are you talking to? Who's going to help you?
Did you have any sense of God or greater reality in your life before that?
There's two things I'll share. When I was really young, I remember standing out in my dad's backyard in Belmont. My dad lived in the hills, so there was a canyon running in the back of my dad's house, and so nature was actually a part of my life. And I remember very young looking up at the sky and saying, I know you can talk to me. Why can't I hear you? But then again, it swept under the rug. And growing up, my dad was a recovering Southern Baptist, so you know, I remember coming home with a picture Bible, and he was like, what are you going to do with that, boy? Sit on it? Like, he just ridiculed, you know, the concept of God and Christ. And so not at all growing up. And so I think there was probably enough exposure to Native American teachings at that point. I went to a sweat lodge and, you know, had that experience of spirit, of connecting with spirit. And so I just cried out, like, help me here. And interestingly enough, that led me down a course of picking up a journal and venting, just free writing in this journal. And at first, it was really a process of just relieving the steam between a very tense relationship between my father and I, reflecting, why is my life like this? What's wrong with me? Why was I born like this? But interestingly enough, I shifted from listening to rap music, which was, you know, it's negative, to a very spiritual reggae. I want to tell a quick story. It's just really interesting because it was in the era of CDs. And what was common with CDs and tapes is that you bootleg them. You buy one and you copy them, and you can even sell them or you give them to your friends. And I went to Amoeba Music Store in San Francisco, and I walked in and I was totally blind to what reggae was really what I was looking for, because I didn't want the just pot smoking vibe of reggae. I wanted the spiritualized gospel reggae. And I went into the music aisle of reggae, and there was this guy with dreadlocks, this obvious looking Rastafarian. And I was like, could you help me here? Can you, direct me to something that, is really what I'm looking for? And he looks me up and down and he says, you're not going to copy these, are you? You're not going to bootleg these, are you? I'm like, no, I respect this. I mean, it's really for my spiritual journey. And lo and behold, he pointed me to this album that is actually made by a Rastafari mystic. And he's, I can't think of the right word, but he's a shaman. And so he talks about meditation. He talks about communion. He talks about letting go of the ego. And I was listening to this music, writing in the journal. And I'll tell you, Asha, it's like, I have a quote here at Masters, which I'll share soon. But a power started flowing into this journal writing of telling me, go inside, focus within. Don't depend on circumstances anymore. Don't depend on whether the girls like you or not, whether the car is cool or not, whether you're popular or not. That's not going to make you happy. You have to find it within yourself. So I started writing and listening. Just finally started to listen to this intuition. And it just took this momentum that it overpowered my life, because for the first time, I felt inwardly strong, confident. I would walk into the class and I would act. I used to be too afraid to drink water in the class. Like, that's how insecure that was. And then I was now walking in class, asking questions, making friends. Like, it was just totally night and day. And one day I was sitting.
And this is all before you met Master. This is all just, this is like, you found the principles of the spiritual path. You were compelled by God,
right,
and led by Guru, but you didn't know it.
You had no idea.
Huh, fantastic.
Because what happened, so I had bought, when I went to Spain, I'll backtrack 2 years from now, about 2006. I was working at Starbucks, so I was a barista. And I wanted to stop what I was doing. I had periods of like really wanting to change, but then I would just revert back.
Right.
And I was working at Starbucks and I wanted to read books. And this customer came in, it's like, these granola bars are going to change people's lives. These books, it made it possible that I could have my dream come true. I'm like, books? What books? And so he wrote a list of 5 books. Autobiography was one of those books.
Oh.
I purchased Autobiography of Yogi in 2006. I still remember the night that I opened that Amazon package, saw Master's photo, didn't know whether it was a man or a female, opened it up, and I opened it up, at least to what I can remember, to a page that said God a lot. I closed it. I said I wasn't Christian. This isn't for me. I wasn't ready.
Interesting.
But I didn't get rid of it, you know?
So now, at this point, do you pick it up again?
That's it. So during the writing,
uh-huh,
this whole, my life is changing, and the intuition came, now you're ready to read it. It didn't say what book, it said, now you're ready to read it. And so I got the Autobiography of Yogi, and this is the first quote, this is the first thing I ever read of Masters. And I say this with all sincerity, all love in my heart, that these 3 sentences embody the message that was coming through journal writing. And after I read this quote, I knew it wasn't me who was writing this, that I knew that some greater power was drawing me closer to something. And again, the concept of guru disciple wasn't there yet. So I didn't know, oh, he's my guru, but I knew it was him. So I'll just read this. The love of God cannot be described, but it can be felt as the heart is purified and made constant. As the mind and the feeling are directed inward, you begin to feel his joy.
Oh my goodness.
And so that, and I'll just, one more quick story, then we're at Ananda.
Uh-huh.
I was sitting at, in a Spanish class, and a friend of mine that was now my friend, we started talking, not about girls, not about parties, but about Babaji in Korea. And here we are in this modern context with all the modern allures of a young man. And my heart is being called to this path. But I told him, I contacted SRF, but they didn't get back to me, which I later find out is very unusual, right? And he says, but there's a direct disciple who teaches Kriya Yoga at a place called Ananda. And one's in Palo Alto.
Good heavens.
I gotta go. Huh.
And so that was 2008?
2009. Yeah.
2009. And so then you came in the door of our temple.
Yeah.
Point.
Yeah, I took learned a meditate course with Tishti and Surendra.
Uh-huh.
And then again with Steve Manis. And then Steve Manis actually told me about the college, Ananda College at the meditation retreat. And, you know, that evening I approached him, you know, I just said, I can't do this while living in the Bay Area. I want to be absorbed in this.
Uh-huh.
And be surrounded by the teachings, being surrounded by the you know, fellow disciples, because my feet, 2 feet are in 2 different boats here, and I'm being pulled. Right. And he said, have you ever thought of the monastery? Which, no. And then he talked about the college. And I'll tell you a quick story about the college, which I find, again, these little signs. Just, you know, you, at least when I was going, they offered the meditation course on Thursday evenings.
Uh-huh.
And so that Monday, that week, we had a guest speaker come into our psychology class, and he was talking about the importance of master programs and PhDs and higher education. And he was representing a psychology school somewhere in Palo Alto. So he handed those interested a brochure. I thought for sure, this is the next step for me. I'm transferring to this school. That Thursday, I go to the meditation course. I express my spiritual longing to Steve. He gives me a brochure for Ananda College.
Oh, isn't it?
And I go back to my car. And I see the brochure for the psychology school in my passenger seat. I'm holding Ananda College, and that thought comes, what path has proven you true?
Ah.
It's been a spiritual path. Ah. And so I moved up there a couple months, 3 months, 4 months.
How old are you now, Dion, when you first came to Ananda Village to be part of the college? How old were you?
24.
I've sort of, you know, because a lot has happened, I was just, so 24, that's the astrological time, these 12-year Jupiter cycles. Many, many people come to live at Ananda. So you came to be a college student, but you never left.
Never left. You know, 2 weeks after I arrived, I no longer wanted to go to college. Once I found out what discipleship was, it's like, this is what I want.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, committing myself to Nakula, I mean, it was the thing to do. And I still feel like it was the right decision because it, again, I came from a very rebellious background.
Uh-huh.
And so the college provided a space to acclimate without being, you know, just, it was just very, it gave me the space to grow into it in a natural way, right, which I needed.
So what really changed when you really realized you were a disciple or became a disciple? How would you describe the difference from before and after becoming a disciple?
Life or death?
That's pretty much what I would say too.
Because it's, I don't know if I want to get into this too much, but for some reason, my karma drew me to witness a suicide in San Francisco.
No.
And that was after I had gotten on the path. And after that experience, I actually had gone to San Francisco to request a visa to go to Peru for a spiritual journey, you know, not ayahuasca journey, but just to break away from this Western paradigm, is at least where I looked at it at that point. And something awful happened. And after that experience, it was so clear that if you continue living the way you've been living, you will be committing suicide, whether it's just killing your spirit. You have to commit 100% to the path you've been drawn to. And like most, it's unclear what that looks like. It's uncertain what that means. But if we, you know, that one step in front of the other, the heart reveals what's appropriate next.
Right.
And that's what led me to Ananda. And that, and once I think you recognize that same calling, that same yearning for something deeper embodies in other people,
mm-hmm,
it strengthens that. You see, I'm home, you know, and that's, I think, a shared experience among many people, that I felt at home at Ananda.
Right, exactly. You know, there is much more we could talk about. I'm just going to bring us up to the present. Presently, you live at Ananda Village. You recently got married within the last year or two?
Yeah, last 2 years. Yeah, our wedding anniversary is May 23rd. So
it's very soon.
And yeah.
Your wife is from Spain, as it happens. The land that you owe so much to.
I know, right? Absolutely.
You seem to have practiced a lot of Spanish in anticipation.
Well, poco a poco. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. And your and the work that you do at Ananda Village now is?
What do online you with Ananda. So a lot of online classes, not programming like code, but you know, page development, program development, admin, student support. Right now, I'm the main instructor for the Essence of Raja Yoga, Step 2 in Pathakriya. Uh-huh. And really just all around, you know, especially with this recent influx of online activity, we're seeing a real expansive integration among the Expanding Light, Online with Ananda, Spanish ministry, and just seeing we're really one, you know. Yeah. So how can we share with that spirit and clarity?
Right. Well, Dion, okay, let me think of a few other thoughts. If you were going to think now about sort of where you see your life going, where you see Ananda going. Part of the interesting thing for me about these conversations has been, you know, I lived through a certain era of Ananda from the founding to the present. But I see Ananda itself has grown. Like it's like it's become, first it was our baby that we just had to keep alive, you know? And now it's like an adult child that is setting out on its own adventure. And you and your tribe, so to speak. I mean, how do you think of Ananda? How do you think of it growing into the future and serving people?
I was present at a satsang with Naya Swami Jaya, which is, I mean, he's really a father, he's a mentor, he's a friend. And I remember being at a satsang that very informal at Chandi House, which is the group living house in Ananda Village. And very fervently, he said, the future of Ananda depends on saints, on people becoming saints, because no matter how much organization there is, no matter how many classes there are or centers there are, if that living vibration of deep attunement, deep devotion to the guru, to the divine is not there, then what is it? It's and so that really struck me, because it's easy to have, I mean, and all those things I mentioned are necessary, and I think they help the work thrive. Mm-hmm. I'm very inspired to take discipleship as seriously as possible, take advantage of this opportunity that life has given myself, given Arati, my wife, and to support others who feel a similar attraction, who want something deeper. And, you know, Ananda thrives on friendship, on divine friendship, on really supporting the individual. And so I really see the role is offering that shade of that umbrella of shade, that spiritual solace for whoever you are, and to really continue to offer through one's own attunement, through one's own spiritual practice, that kind of magnetism that will also inspire that in others, so that we have self-realized saints, you know, that are carrying this work forward.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Dion, thank you so much for sharing so much from your heart. That was really a thrilling conversation. And thank you, God.
I know.
Yeah, thank you, God. Some people sometimes ask me, what would your life have been like without Swami? I said, I'd be dead in a ditch somewhere.
Absolutely.
It's as simple as that. And I'm glad we both aren't.
I'm glad we aren't.
God bless you, my friend.
Thank you. Great to spend this time with you.
Okay, you guys are off air.